Thanks for joining us. This is Notepad. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Very recently, the EPF has announced the 2022 dividend. Of course, the lower 2022 EPF dividend rate for conventional savings and Sharia savings were within the ambit of expectations, some economists have argued. The announcement that was made on March 4th on a Saturday declared a 5.35% for conventional savings with a total payout of 45 billion ringgit. And a 4.75% for Sharia savings with a total payout of 5.7 billion ringgit. This brings the total payout for last year to 51.14 billion, benefiting about 15.72 million benefactors and members of EPF, people like me, for instance. Now, in 2021, the EPF declared dividends of 6.1% for conventional savings, 6.1 for 2021, 5.35 for 2022, yeah, drop of about 70 bips. Now, 5.65% for Sharia savings for 2021 compared to 4.75% for 2022. So that's a 90 bips gap. And the spread between Sharia and conventional for 2022 is the widest at 60 bips for 2022 compared to 40% spread of 40 bips spread for 2021. So the jaw widening between conventional and Sharia is growing. What would be some of the ideas when it comes to EPF trying to close this jaw? Some of the conversations that has revolved around the briefings from EPF when it comes to closing that jaw, in a way, maximizing Sharia savings, is trying to decouple the portfolio savings altogether from the total portfolio, basically trying to maximize the returns for Sharia. However, this, reapportionment of the Sharia savings portfolio will take place throughout this year and next year. In fact, you can only experience the closer than before Sharia savings gap only in the dividend announcement for 2024, which is going to be done around February 2025. So a long way to go, yeah, when it comes to the Sharia savings being closed. That's one angle that we need to look at. But more importantly, we're looking at a downward trend when it comes to the conventional dividend payouts. We're looking at 5.45 for 2018, 5.2 for 2020, and it did bump for 6.1 for 2021, but again, it dropped to the sub-6 levels at around 5.35. This is a continuity of how saving returns are going to be depressed over the years to come. That's one more angle. So the jaw growing for Sharia savings is widening. That's one problem. Another problem is the lower than before returns for Sharia and conventional savings in together. And the third problem that we really need to look at, and perhaps one of the biggest problems that EPF needs to look at, is the lowest than ever average returns, particularly for the B40 community and the M40 community. In fact, from the briefings, we've heard that the T20 is contributing about 80%+ of the total portfolio AUM of EPF. So think about it, 20% of workers, that 15 million plus members, is holding 80% of that 1 trillion AUM. Now that's one angle. Another angle to look at it is that of that 1 trillion AUM, 20% of them is being held by 80% of the workers in Malaysia. Let me repeat. 1 trillion AUM EPF, 20% of that, so about 200 billion, is being held by 80% of the 15.7 million workers in Malaysia. If that is not a retirement crisis, I really don't know what constitutes a retirement crisis. Following this, EPF CEO, Dato' Sri Amir Hamzah, has taken great pains and at great length trying to explain the way forward and the step forward. But the most important thing here is that he has reiterated the fact that EPF will not allow for further withdrawals from EPF moving forward. That is a key point. And I don't know whether that's going to solve today's problems, but generally speaking, it will, in a way, arrest the retirement crisis. Now, there's a lot that needs to be unpacked for this topic. So I'm going to be bringing two guests shortly after this break, Azrul Khalib of Gallant Center, as well as Pankaj Kumar, commentator when it comes to the financial situation in the country shortly after the break. But generally speaking, both Azrul and Pankaj were with me, or rather, I was with them in the post-EPF dividend announcement briefing given by some of the C-suites there. And clearly, the situation is not rosy. But the most important thing, or the most important step right now, is to address what the problems are, or at the very least, acknowledge it before we start to address it. We'll be right back after these messages. We continue our coverage on the EPF. The lower 2022 EPF dividend rate for conventional savings and share savings were within the expectations of some economic experts. However, this does bring about some questions on social benefits and social safety nets. Joining us on the line is Azrul Muhammad Khalib, the founder and CEO of the Gallen Centre for Health and Social Policy. Azrul, let's take a quick overview in terms of some of the top-line comments that you can give following the EPF dividend announcement for 2022.
Well, certainly, Ibrahim, you know, we're wondering
in terms of how does this report
by EPF actually affect people, especially for those who are most vulnerable and especially those needing financial assistance to fund their health. You know, the data that's coming out from the EPF has demonstrated that basically we're looking at a reduction in total deposits. Savings by especially the B40 group. You know, we heard that they now comprise around 0.7% of the total, or around 7.7 billion of the fund. And this being the group of people who are most vulnerable, they currently make up around 6.29 million of contributors. And shockingly, it was shared by EPF that they now have an average around 1,225 ringgit in this fund, which is supposed to be, not only just in terms of retirement. I mean, we frequently talk about, you know, simpanan haitua retirement also, but this fund is also supposed to help in the case of financial expenditures relating to things like health, education, housing, and so forth. Even the M40, it sounds like, are in serious trouble too. I mean, they make up around, I think it was mentioned, 40% of the total contributors, or around 6.2 million, and they have around 16%, or around 818 billion, of the savings in EPF, and that is something that they have around 16%, or around 159 billion of the total savings in the fund, and on average they have around 25,000 in their EPF account. So right now the biggest contributor to this is really those in the T20, and they now make up 83%. And just before, I think, the COVID crisis, I think it was mentioned that they had around 70%. So now they have actually increased by around 10%. And on average, they have around 250,000 each in their funding. So, you know, this is something that's worrying, because it shows that for not just the B40, but also this M40, so-called M40 group, there is actually less buffer, less savings, less ability to access some form of financial assistance in the case that they have some sort of unexpected or catastrophic expenditure relating to health. So it's important here, whenever we have conversations concerning the impact of the previous withdrawals, not just in terms of retirement and, you know, going into old age and so forth, but also in terms of dealing with the consequences of chronic diseases such as cancer and, you know, accidents and so forth.
There's also that long tail risk that Malaysians are living longer, and therefore these already inadequate saving levels are going to create some sort of a burden towards the government. We've heard the EPF CEO, Dato' Sri Amir Hamzah, during the dividend announcement also presented some ideas into what the EPF wants to do in addressing the long tail. There's also a private briefing that was done by the Chief Strategy Officer of EPF with a group of analysts following that. Do you feel that these kind of explanations and I guess plans are sufficient enough to address the kind of concerns arising from the low level of savings right now?
Well, you know, I don't think the explanations are sufficient to have that kind of awareness amongst the public. And also, most importantly, it becomes a problem of the government to address what are they going to do about it. Because at the end of the day, we're looking at more than about 6 million right now under the age of 55 who have savings of less than 10,000 ringgit, and they're going to need help, not really maybe 15, 20 years down the road. They're probably going to need help today. And this is going to have financial implications because we've seen from chronic illnesses, you know, such as cancer, where more and more people are being diagnosed earlier and the numbers are getting younger. And so if they don't have anything in their EPF, and most likely they don't have anything in their savings, there's not going to be much that they're going to be able to make out-of-pocket payments for. And therefore, they're going to be looking at the government for, you know, the kind of assistance that's going to be enable them to avoid a premature death. Now, we know under EPF, you can already withdraw more than, three or four dozen critical illnesses, which include, you know, for organ transplant, multiple sclerosis, stroke, cancer, and so forth. And now, you know, you've got chronic liver and lung disease, lupus. But what we're seeing right now is that the EPF savings can possibly no longer be factored in terms of dealing with the financial consequences of having such chronic illnesses for which a large population of Malaysians are actually living with right now.
Okay, let's talk about that as well, because healthcare is a big concern. In fact, if you segregate inflation cost by types, healthcare cost inflation is actually one of the highest, if not the highest, after food. And this does not seem to be abating anytime soon. So it does create some sort of a pressure, not just towards the public healthcare services, but of course private healthcare services as well. Do you feel that the idea of saving, or I guess insurance on healthcare, is going to create some sort of a strain to population, especially for Malaysians as we get older? There's a lot more old people in Malaysia than before.
It's going to be a fact
that we're going to need some kind of savings in order for us to be able to deal with the consequences of a diagnosis of a chronic illness. You know, we've seen from the action study, which was done by the George Institute for Global Health in Australia, and with the principal investigator being here in Malaysia, they found that for Malaysia, the percentages of those were found to be in financial catastrophe 1 year after a cancer diagnosis, you know, was pretty much across the board, at least a third for those who are accessing public health care, and 70% in private hospitals. And this is something that is 1 year after a cancer diagnosis. So, you know, there's very little there for people to be able to have some kind of assistance to access some kind of saving for them to be able to fund. Now, you mentioned just now medical inflation. Malaysia has one of the highest medical inflation rates in this region. It's like currently around 16%. And we see this not only just affecting the private healthcare, but also public healthcare, because the costs are similar. You just don't see it because it's heavily subsidized by the government. But the problem here becomes a problem for the government, for the public healthcare sector, where, for which the bill to address these non-communicable diseases, including things like diabetes, becomes more and more increased per year. And then for those who are accessing private healthcare, they find that their own insurance coverage may not be sufficient to be able to cover the kind of treatments that they need to increase their ability to survive, you know, the 5 years after a diagnosis of chronic illness. And this is where we find that in Malaysia, there's a direct consequence towards 5 year survival rates for certain diseases. And we see that for cancer specifically, it's actually one of the worst in the region. And it's linked back to the ability of Malaysians to be able to fund and support their healthcare. So this is one of the reasons why for the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, we've been advocating things like social health insurance, where you can have a mechanism similar to the EPF, where people pay in into a larger pool of funds, which can then be used to provide support for such you know, treatments such as cancer.
Final comments, Azrul?
Well, you know, I think it's a situation where more and more people and governments especially are kicking the can down the road for it to be somebody else's problem. In fact, the EPF withdrawals is something that we've been worried about because it means that people are going to be in trouble sooner. People are going to be at risk of poverty sooner. There's going to be a likelihood that these people who are getting sick are going to be the problem of the government, and that means more taxpayer money that's going to have to go into the system. And the fact of the matter is that what the health ministers in the past have said time and again, the current healthcare financing of Malaysia's healthcare is not sustainable. And right now we see EPF, which has been a critical component of that, suddenly becoming less of a factor for a lot of people because basically they've drained out their accounts and it's no longer able to provide the kind of out-of-pocket payments for things like transport, babysitting, parking, you know, which you are going to be able to use to pay as complementing medical care. So it's not just about spending for treatment. So we're worried, seriously, right now. If you look at EPF just within the context of retirement, okay, that's one problem. But right now, if you look at the ability to help with healthcare expenditure, it's going to be a massive problem and it's going to be one big headache for the government to be able to address.
All right, thank you very much. That was Azrul Khalib, the founder and CEO of the Gallen Centre for Health and Social Policy. In fact, let's talk about the withdrawal, largely because the CEO, Dato' Sri Amir Hamzah, said that the EPF does not support calls to allow for more withdrawals from the pension fund. He pointed out that the median EPF savings for Bumiputera savers have gone down from RM15,000 to RM4,900 as of December this year, last year, a significant 70% drop. So joining us on the line is our good friend of the show, Pankaj. Pankaj Kumar is the Managing Director of Data Metrics Research and Information, Sdn Bhd. Pankaj, what do you think of this idea of the statement coming in from the EPF CEO about not allowing for more withdrawals to take place?
Thank you, Ibrahim and Esrawani, for having me. I think, first of all, we've got to understand where we are today after the RM145 billion that was withdrawn over the last 3 years due to COVID. The medium savings, as you rightly pointed out, and I think EPF is quite cognizant about this issue, is very low. Yeah, and if the savings are very low, how are the average Malaysian going to reach the minimum threshold level which EPF has currently put at 240,000, but mind you, even that is not enough, because that only allows you to withdraw RM1,000 a month for the next 20 years. So EPF is already talking about living wages, which is what has been defined as RM2,700 per month for those who are living in KL. So on that basis, if you look at it, where current median savings are, and based on the current low wage structure that we have, and I think you probably remember some of the numbers that were shared during the presentation, 80% of Malaysians, working Malaysians, who are members of EPF, have salary of RM5,000 or less, and of which about 44% of them have salary of RM2,000 or less. So when you have very low wages and EPF contribution, as you know, it's 13% for employer and 11% for employee, it's very low. And with that, how are you going to rebuild the savings that you have to attain the minimum threshold that is currently placed at 240,000? So it's kind of be quite difficult. So with very low wages and with very low savings, how are you going to allow further withdrawals? There's very little left anyway. But I mean, of course, we are talking about median, and of course, there are people who have well beyond the minimum threshold level, or even below above the 600,000 level that we talked about. Yes, they have sufficient savings; they have more than enough. Some of them are able to withdraw on other grounds. If you look at EPF schemes. EPF have many withdrawal schemes for you to withdraw, especially those related to housing, medical, or even performing Hajj. So all those are there. So for those who can withdraw, you have the right schemes to withdraw anyway. So to me, the target here is, especially coming from the politicians, has been the B40s, and those who are trying it hard to make ends meet. And for most of it, I would say majority or probably 80 or 90% of them, you know, don't have sufficient savings. So very little help can be, you know, can be done, you know, in terms of allowing them to withdraw more. So to me, that's not really a solution.
I want to learn more about the retirement crisis in the making situation. Do you feel that the retirement crisis is here and present instead of in the making? It's already arrived?
I think if you look at the overall EPF data, it shows that we do not have sufficient savings, period. Yeah. So on that basis alone, if everyone is relying on EPF savings for retirement purposes, then definitely it's not enough. Yeah. Unless you tell me that by and large, Malaysians have savings outside the EPF retirement scheme, yeah, or the EPF savings. And as you know, if you look at the data, we have roughly 16 million working population, but EPF members, they're only about 8 million now. Yeah, so about roughly 53% thereabouts. So there are a lot of Malaysians who are out there working, earning a living, but they do not have a social safety net at all. Yeah, so where do these guys go? You know, I mean, what savings mechanism are there for them, you know, to fall back on when they reach retirement age? So to me, we actually are already in a retirement crisis.
Okay, that's not pleasant to hear, but, you know, it is the truth, I suppose. Finally, do you feel that the statements coming in from EPF in terms of how they want to increase the returns on the dividends, particularly Shariah moving forward, is sufficient or gives you comfort? Or do you feel that even that is also a big question mark to look into?
I think EPF is trying very hard in terms of increasing the rate of returns or narrowing the gap between the dividend that was announced for the conventional fund as well as the Shariah fund. So, and last year, they were basically hit by certain provisions for the equity exposure, in particular, those related to the GLIRF stocks. And I think 70% of the write-down was related to GLIRF stocks alone. And 74% of the write-down last year was in relation to the Shariah fund. Yeah. So on that basis, I think EPF is trying to make good in the next, you know, a few years. I hope that the gap between the Shariah and conventional can be closed. Because if you look at it, over the last 5 years, the gap has been between 25 to 50 basis points. And last year, the gap widened to 60 basis points. Yeah? So I think EPF probably would have to do a little bit more in terms of providing better return for Shariah depositors.
Okay. Pankaj, we don't have much time left, but generally speaking, you wrote something in the Star very recently in terms of tiered dividend not being a solution, cap on contribution, perhaps using EPF for housing. These are the kind of general ideas that you can share with us. What would be the way forward when it comes to maximizing the returns, savings levels of the people, and perhaps how do we save more moving forward?
I think the issue here is really how do we help those who have withdrawn substantially from the EPF. And one way to do this is actually to have tiered contribution rate, especially coming from employer. Leave the employee contribution intact, raise the employer contribution for those earning 5,000 and below from 13% to 20%. But at the same time, what we do is that we have a tiered contribution rate for employer. Yeah, that means 20% for those earning 5,000 and below, let's say 15% for those earning between 5 to 8,000, 10% for those 8 to 10,000 and above 10,000, maybe just 8%. So on that basis, the employer cost is rebalanced. Yeah, while overall it may be about the same, but it pays more for lower income group. And at the same time, I think what is more important is for us to introduce a cap. If you look at today's structure, as far as EPF is concerned, especially on the T20 or T5 for that matter and above, you know, for those earning 40, 50,000 ringgit a month, the EPF contribution is huge. Yeah, so on that basis, I think employer, the cap must be introduced for members to have a ceiling, yeah, as to how much they can contribute per month. So, for example, I think I use the 10,000 ringgit as a threshold per month maximum. Yeah, in terms of EPF contribution. So I think that would be one way to rebalance the distribution between those who have and do not have.
Final comments, Pankaj?
I think EPF is a great way for us to save our retirement for the rainy days, you know, but Because of the pressure due to COVID, we had taken steps to withdraw those monies. But now it's time to rebuild them. And I think the government needs to address this issue seriously. If it's not done quick enough, we will face a retirement crisis that will have social consequences to Malaysia at large and to the government itself.
Thank you very much. That was Pankaj C. Kumar, the Managing Director of Data Matrix Research and Information Setambat. We continue to bring more information when it comes to the EPF savings, but it's also important to understand and keep track of the latest retirement account rules, which have always undergone changes, and in case one affects how you use your savings in the future. And also at SRI1A, we're going to be bringing some of the conversations in terms of how the government is going to maximise the retirement crisis or trying to manage that as well. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.